And this is part two of this week's clinical focus on cholesterol-lowering supplements. So in part one, we talked about whether or not it's important to lower cholesterol at all, because there's some controversy over cholesterol's role in cardiovascular risk. And in fact, if you are at cardiovascular risk, you might consider other measures besides lowering cholesterol. You might consider using anti-inflammatory supplements that have no impact whatsoever on cholesterol. You might consider taking resveratrol, which has the red wine protective polyphenol effect on cardiovascular disease without having any impact on cholesterol. But let's return to the theme of things that are reputed to lower cholesterol. And we're going to evaluate them with a little help from ConsumerLab.com. They recently published a review of cholesterol-lowering supplements. And in part one, we talked about niacin. So let's move along and talk about some of the other things that are often touted as cholesterol-lowering supplements or can be used to lower cholesterol. Just a little addendum on niacin. A lot of people have been hoodwinked, I think that's the only word you can use, hoodwinked into using what is called no-flush niacin or niacin hexinositol, or alternatively referred to as inositol hexanicotinate. This is a form of niacin that causes absolutely no flushing, but it's one of those instances where no pain, no gain. There's absolutely no cholesterol-lowering effect. I identified that very early in my professional career and began trying it out in the 1980s when I first began. And I informed various vitamin companies that were making the product that it was useless. And really, you know, it was kind of a scam to sell patients on the notion that, okay, here's a delivery system for niacin that is safe and effective. To the extent that we don't even think niacin is necessarily that effective, it's a double whammy. It's like not going to lower your cholesterol, and it's, you know, even if niacin were to be beneficial, this would not achieve the niacin beneficial effect. So let's move on. Let's talk about some of the other agents. DHA and EPA, omega-3 fish oils. Well, research shows that these are beneficial potentially for the heart. There's a lot of studies that look at the fish oil effect on cardiovascular disease. And some of the studies have been negative studies recently, but they used infinitesimal amounts of fish oil, like one fish oil pill a day, and sometimes in populations that already had adequate amounts of fish consumption, or sometimes they did studies where they compared a fish oil capsule to an olive oil capsule, and olive oil may be beneficial, so you can't really use it as a placebo. Too many problems with these studies that show no beneficial effect. I think fish oil at reasonable doses or oily fish in the diet is a very well-established principle for reducing cardiovascular risk. But does it lower cholesterol? Well, it doesn't really affect LDL fish oil, but fish oil definitely can lower triglycerides and might raise HDL slightly. So here's the math. I mean, if you lower your triglycerides, say your triglycerides are 500, and you lower your triglycerides to an acceptable level, which is 100 or less, in my opinion. But let's say, for the sake of argument, a little mathematical problem, you lower your triglycerides from 500 to 100. You correspondingly will lower your VLDL, very low density lipoproteins, which are definitely harmful, by 40 points, I guess 80 points. I should have picked something that's divisible by 400 by 5, it's right, 80 points. So you would lower your cholesterol by 80 points. I'm forgetting my high school math. But simply by getting your cholesterol down from 500 to 100, you lower your VLDL. And correspondingly, that should have an effect on your overall cholesterol, if indeed your problem is high triglycerides. If you don't have high triglycerides, you may not see that much of an effect of fish oil, but that doesn't mean that fish oil is not effective and beneficial and protective against cardiovascular disease. So moving right along, garlic is something that is touted as a cholesterol lowerer, and you can achieve small reductions in total cholesterol, LDL, and triglycerides. This according to some of the early studies, but more recent studies don't show much benefit in cholesterol lowering. But I think that the beneficial effects of garlic go beyond cholesterol lowering when it comes to the heart. There's some studies, that really excellent studies that have been done by Wakanaga, the manufacturer of kaolic-aged garlic extract, or AGE, which is my favorite form of garlic. I think when you age the garlic, you impart certain additional properties to the garlic, which are heart-protective, anti-inflammatory. Certainly garlic is a blood thinner, natural blood thinner. And it may improve vascular tone, heal the endothelium, and has a variety of beneficial effects that go beyond changes in your lipid profile. So garlic is one of those things, okay, won't lower your cholesterol, but there's a beneficial effect. What about goo goo lipids? Goo goo lipids, in my opinion, I used to entertain the idea many years ago that you could give goo goo lipids for lowering cholesterol. Most of the studies don't support the effectiveness of goo goo lipids for cholesterol. And, oh, by the way, do they do anything else? You know, unlike garlic, which may have ancillary effects, even if it doesn't lower cholesterol very much, it's unclear whether goo goo lipids do much for reducing cardiovascular risk. Some studies suggest that the dosage that you take, it would have to be really mega dosing to have an impact. Goo goo lipids are, they're like a rosinous type of compound, and you'd have to take fairly high doses to admix with the cholesterol in your gastrointestinal tract and sort of sweep it out of your system. So goo goo lipids probably aren't that advisable. Next on the list is pantothene, which is an activated form of pantothenic acid. Pantothenic acid is a precursor for acetyl-CoA, and acetyl-CoA has to do with the fat metabolism in the body. So there's actually a reasonable scientific rationale for believing that pantothene might be helpful. Some studies suggest modest decreases in total cholesterol, LDL, and triglycerides, with accompanying rises in HDL, which should be good. I have found that pantothene is inconsistent with my patients. Some patients get a response, they'll drop their cholesterol 20 or 30 points. Other patients will see very, very modest reductions. And the typical dosage is fairly high. You have to take 300 milligrams 3 to 4 times daily. That's the recommended dosing. And it's kind of a difficult dosing schedule because, you know, 3 to 4 times a day, that's not so easy for people to adhere to. So pantothene is not big in my pantheon of supplements that are good for lowering cholesterol. Polycosanol is even worse. Polycosanol is an amazing story. You know, studies from Cuba that came out, I guess in the late 80s, showed that it was fantastic for lowering cholesterol. It's a derivative of sugarcane, but it's not a non-carbohydrate derivative of sugarcane. It's a long-chain sugar alcohol. And it really worked well, according to the studies from Cuba. However, something tells me that the Cuban government may be a little suspect in terms of, shall we say, scientific integrity or independence. So a group in Scandinavia tested out polycosanol, and some studies had been negative on polycosanol, and the criticism from the Cubans was, well, you're not using our polycosanol material that's made in Cuba. So the Scandinavians said, well, send us your polycosanol material that's made in Cuba, you know, according to your own special recipe for making polycosanol. It should be all the same because polycosanol is a well-characterized chemical. But they said, you know, we'll follow your protocol. We'll see if we can replicate your results. in Scandinavia. And what they found, to their disappointment, is that it really didn't work. And that's what I have found in using polycosanol. I think it has very little, if any, effect on cholesterol. And it garnered a lot of attention for a while. It's still being used and touted by some people, but I just think it's a lost cause. It is generally thought to be safe, but it is ineffective. Okay, one of the big players in this field is red-yeast rice. Red-yeast rice actually is the way that statins were discovered. Red-yeast rice is a natural source of statins. It contains naturally occurring lovastatin, which is the ingredient in the first statin drug, Mevacor. It also may contain other related chemicals that may have beneficial effects. So you may say, well, some people have said, well, look, if you're going to take a statin, just take a drug. And I've actually been back and forth on this. Like, if you really need to lower cholesterol, take a standardized drug. At least you know precisely what you're getting. And if you get in trouble, you can identify it. If it doesn't work, you can play around with the dose. It's fairly well characterized. I have changed my opinion on red yeast rice because, A, some people just don't want to take a drug and they want to take something natural. And, these are people who, believe in natural medicine. They want to eat organic. They don't want to take medication and they would rather take a natural alternative. And I'm okay with that. But in addition, what's nice about red yeast rice is that it is better tolerated. It's actually better tolerated. One recent study that was very exciting showed it looked at people who were statin intolerant. They wanted to take statin drugs, but they couldn't. They had terrible aches and pains, particularly in the lower extremities. So they just were intolerant. And it's believed that that's not in everyone. There's a genetic predisposition to that. Some people are pretty okay with statins. They don't have side effects, or at least the side effects are subtle and masked. Some people just have devastating side effects with statins, but there is a reason to lower their cholesterol or protect them from cardiovascular disease. And so they took, in this study, red yeast rice, and only 7% of them reported muscle pain. And that was good because at least they were taking something. Now, interesting thing about statins is that statins work at least in two ways at least. They lower cholesterol, but beyond their cholesterol-lowering effect, they may have sort of a super aspirin effect. They may have an anti-inflammatory effect at the level of the coronary artery blood vessel wall. And therefore, even if you use a red yeast rice that lowers your cholesterol by little, and the cardiologist says, well, that's not enough, you really need to be on a statin, you still will get some additional protection from the super aspirin effects of the active ingredients in the red yeast rice. So in patients who are either refusenics, they won't take drugs, or they can't tolerate drugs, red yeast rice becomes an attractive alternative. There's a caution flag on this, which is that you got to get a good brand because certain products are contaminated with a potential toxin, which is citrinin, C-I-T-R-I-N-I-N. And some of the products on the market, and you can check out the report from consumerlab.com, they actually identify products that are contaminated with citrinin. It's a little bit of a challenging purification process from this natural red yeast rice, and sometimes in the fermentation, harmful byproducts arise. And these products, these sometimes referred to as monocalins, can have toxic effects. And so you got to get a good reputable brand. And I think, the brand that we carry at the Hoffman Center has been well studied and has been subject to tests to uncover dangerous chemicals or toxic byproducts. And passes musters every time, and our patients tolerate it very well. And I've only seen a couple of patients who've had problems with the red yeast rice, but it's got statins in it, and it will cause potentially the same side effects. And when you use red yeast rice, you must use coenzyme Q10, because by the same mechanism by which it inhibits cholesterol, it also inhibits the synthesis of coenzyme Q10. So you can deplete your coenzyme Q10. You need to take coenzyme Q10 or ubiquinol. I prefer to give patients about 300 milligrams, 200 to 300 milligrams of CoQ10, or 100 to 200 milligrams of ubiquinol whenever they're taking either a statin or red yeast rice. So the next item on our list is the soy protein. Soy, actually, if you take soy protein, like a powdered soy protein, and make a smoothie out of it every day, it appears to modestly lower cholesterol and improve LDL to HDL ratios. So there's controversy about soy and whether soy is healthy, whether it has hormonal effects, whether it has creates digestive problems. Some people don't do well with soy products at all, but it can be a part of a process by which you naturally lower cholesterol if you tolerate soy. So, and it may also confer additional benefits. It may protect the prostate. It's controversial, but there may be breast protective effects of soy protein, although in the past it was alleged that the estrogen-like compounds increased the risk of breast cancer, but new studies contradict that. So that, is a plausible alternative. While we're talking about soy protein, we'll talk a little bit about fiber. There's this whole thing about, take lots and lots and lots and lots of fiber, and you will lower cholesterol. In fact, Cheerios used to advertise, in these poignant ads where these kids would give Cheerios to dad because they wanted dad to stick around. They didn't want dad to, have succumbed to a massive heart attack. How these little kids knew, I'm not sure, but they were cute kids, and it kind of got the message home that if you were a responsible dad, you would eat your Cheerios and live to see your kids graduate from college and get married and have grandchildren. That was the purport of those advertisements. Well, those advertisements are essentially bogus, because the amount of soy fiber that you would have to get, it mostly comes from oat bran, is fairly minuscule. You'd have to eat, many, many bowls of Cheerios every day, and who can do that? You can, if you, oat bran is a mucilaginous substance that is completely tasteless, and if you steel yourself to it, to eat this glop, in large amounts, you may get a slight reduction in your cholesterol, but it's, in my opinion, it's hardly worth it. It's relatively starchy, delivering a lot of carbohydrate calories. It's pretty unpalatable, and it's something not for the faint-hearted to undertake lowering cholesterol by eating oat bran. I once posted a cartoon of a guy beginning to devour a gigantic muffin. I mean, he's this little tiny figure, and the muffin is like the size of a, four-story building, and he's like beginning to chew away at the muffin. And the caption is, the amount of oat bran that you would have to consume in a lifetime to prevent a heart attack. if you look at it that way, you got to be pretty dedicated to do that. Okay, another thing that can be helpful are sterols and stanol esters. And these are present in margarine-like products that purport to be better than butter. They also can be taken in pills and capsules. They do work to lower cholesterol. Now, what hasn't been demonstrated is whether they reduce cardiovascular disease. Again, this is the problem with niacin. Reduce cholesterol, reduce triglycerides, improved everything on paper, but did it have an ultimate impact on cardiovascular risk or even on longevity? And we don't know that about sterols and stanol esters. We know that they are the substance that is in food that is one of the most helpful substances for reducing or optimizing your cholesterol. And you can find them in fruits and vegetables. You can actually look up tables that show you the varying amounts of sterol and stanol esters that you find in various foods. But they absolutely can lower cardiovascular risk. They work predominantly by reducing the absorption of dietary cholesterol in the GI tract. And they sort of whisk it away. And they also prevent the reabsorption of cholesterol when the liver recycles cholesterol through the gut. So these are, you know, some of the things that you can achieve with sterols and stanol esters. The effect is modest, 9% decrease in LDL, up to 15% has been reported. There is no effect, however, on beneficial HDL. So, you know, it's unclear whether this is really going to, you know, revolutionize your cardiovascular risk profile. Citronol is something that when I formulated a product for the Vitamin Shoppe called Advanced Cholesterol Support, it's a proprietary blend of what are called citrus polymethoxylated flavones and palm tocotrienols. Tocotrienols also have a reputation for lowering cholesterol. Preliminary studies actually show reductions of 20 to 30% in total cholesterol, 19 to 27% in LDL, and 24 to 34% in triglycerides. Studies are not that good. They're preliminary studies. There was one small controlled study. So citronol, which is a trademark product, you can find it in many cholesterol-lowering formulas, including the cholesterol Advanced Cholesterol Support product that I developed for the Vitamin Shoppe years ago, has a claim to fame for optimizing cholesterol. The typical dosage is 300 milligrams per day. And again, you know, once again, will that lowering of cholesterol be translated into an actual benefit when it comes to cardiovascular risk? That is something that has not been thoroughly demonstrated, I think, for any supplement on the market. And in my opinion, it's barely been demonstrated for statins. I think that's the big problem with statins, is for the average person with high cholesterol, taking a statin confers very, very little benefit. It's a different story if you have, you know, seriously blocked arteries that have been demonstrated to be full of plaque, or if you've had a bypass surgery, which indicates that you are very prone to cardiovascular risk, or if you've had a stent, again, usually an indication, if it wasn't done erroneously or prematurely, that you're at risk. That would make a case for, you know, some sort of cholesterol-lowering regimen. But for the average person, even statins don't show that open and shut evidence of their clinical benefit. So, you know, when we look at supplements, you know, maybe some supplements are impressive. They lower cholesterol by 5 or 10 or 15 or up to 20%. But will that translate into a benefit? Is it worth it? Should we be fixated on lowering cholesterol? That is a question that needs further investigation. But, you know, I think in conclusion, people who take cholesterol-lowering supplements may be succumbing to the same illusion that doctors and their patients succumb to when they buy into the cholesterol hypothesis. And so that's what I have to say on cholesterol reduction. This is part two of our clinical focus on cholesterol-lowering supplements. If you haven't heard part one yet, please check it out. And keep following us at drhoffman.com, because we're going to march through the entire realm of medicine and nutrition, covering clinical focus topics each week. Thanks for joining us. This is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.